On the morning after the feds burned down her house and took her father, Hava woke from dreams of sea anemones. While the girl dressed, Ahmed, who hadn't slept at all, paced outside the bedroom door, watching the sky brighten on the other side of the window glass. The rising sun had never before made him feel late. When she emerged from the bedroom, looking older than her 8 years, he took her suitcase and she followed him out the front door. He had led the girl to the middle of the street before he raised his eyes to what had been her house.
Hava, we should go,
he said, but neither moved. The snow softened around their boots as they stared across the street to the wide patch of flattened ash. A few orange embers hissed in pools of gray snow, but all else was char. Not 7 years earlier, Ahmed had helped Doka build an addition, so the girl would have a room of her own. He had drawn the blueprints and chopped the hardwood and cut it into boards and turned them into a room. And when Doka had promised to help him build an addition to his own house, should he ever have a child, Ahmed had thanked his friend and walked home, the knot in his throat unraveling into a sob when the door closed behind him. Carrying that lumber the 40 meters from the forest had left his knuckles blistered, his underarms sobbing, but now a few hours of flames had lifted what had taken him months to design, weeks to carry, days to build, all but the nails and rivets, all but the hinges and bolts, all into the sky. And too were carried the small treasures that had made Doka's house his own. There was the hand-carved chess set on a round side table. When moved, the squat white king wobbled from side to side, like a man just sober enough to stand. And Doka had named his majesty Boris Yeltsin. There was the porcelain vase adorned with Persian arabesques, and beside that a cassette deck radio with an antenna long enough to scrape the ceiling when propped up on a telephone book, yet too short to reach anything but static. There was the 85-year-old Quran, the purple cover writhing with calligraphy, that Doka's grandfather had purchased in Mecca. There were these things, and the flames ate these things. And since fire doesn't distinguish between the word of God and the word of the Soviet Communications Registry Bureau, both Quran and telephone directory returned to his mouth in the same inhalation of smoke. The girl's fingers braceleted his wrist. He wanted to throw her over his shoulder and sprint northward until the forest swallowed the village. But standing before the blackened timbers, he couldn't summon the strength to bring a consoling word to his lips, to hold the girl's hand in his own, to move his feet in the direction he wanted them to go. That's my house. Her voice broke their silence, and he heard it as he would the only sound in an empty corridor.
Don't think of it like that, he said.
Like what?
Like it's still yours.
He wound her bright orange scarf around her neck and frowned at the sooty fingerprint on her cheek. He had been awake in bed the previous night when the feds came. First the murmur of a diesel engine, a low rumble he'd come to fear more than gunfire, then Russian voices. He had gone to the living room and pulled back the blackout curtain as far as he dared. Through the triangle of glass, headlights parted the night. Four soldiers, stocky, well-fed, emerged from the truck. One drank from a vodka bottle and cursed the snow each time he stumbled. This soldier's grandfather had told him, the morning the soldier reported to the Vladivostok conscription center, that he would have perished in Stalingrad if not for the numbing grace of vodka. The soldier, whose cheeks were divoted from years of applying toothpaste to his adolescent acne, believed Chechnya to be a worse war than Stalingrad, and rationed his vodka accordingly. From his living room, Ahmed wanted to shout, beat a drum, set off a flare. But across the street, they had already reached Doka's door, and he didn't even look to the phone that was without a pulse for 10 years now. They knocked on the door once, twice, then kicked it down. Through the doorway, Ahmed watched torchlight move across the walls. So passed the longest 2 minutes of Ahmed's life until the soldiers reappeared in the doorway with Doka. The duct tape strip across his mouth wrinkled with his muted screams. They pulled a black hood over his head. Where was Hava? Sweat formed on Ahmed's forehead.
His hands felt impossibly heavy. When the soldiers grabbed Doka by the shoulders and belt, tumbling him into the back of the truck and slamming the door, the relief falling over Ahmed was quickly peeled back by self-loathing. Because he was alive, safe in his living room, while in the truck across the street, not 20 meters away, Doka was a dead man.